Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Bethany for this 2 o'clock session with the William Wilberforce Trust entitled Criminal Justice, A Kingdom Welcome, Integrating Ex-Offenders. If this is what you came to see, you're in the right place. If not, now's your time to leave. Anybody? Good. Just so you're aware, this talk is being recorded. So if you're asking questions, please be polite and well-mannered. And also, can I ask you to turn off your phones or switch them on silent, please? If you haven't been in Bethany before, I'll just run through the fire procedure. Just so you know, in the very unlikely event of a fire, your fire exit is the way you came in and back down the stairs. There is an alternative fire exit at the back of the room. Next to the coral bar, you can see the green light above the corridor. Whatever you do in the case of a fire, please do not go out onto the grandstand. There is no way off the grandstand apart from this room. So you'll have to jump off the grandstand to escape the fire. So don't do that, please. Also, anybody concerned about getting off the campsite either tonight or tomorrow morning, please go to the info booth to pick up further information on the grand evacuation work that we're currently carrying out. Operation Dunkirk is go, so it's all under control. And as a final note before I hand over, please, if you are not already, consider becoming an angel. The angel's bus is by the main stage, I believe, and if you want to support Greenbelt in all that it does, and you've had a wonderful festival this year, please consider becoming an angel, supporting the festival so that your years to come can be equally, if not better. Okay, I'll hand over.
Hi, good afternoon. It's my pleasure to introduce for the second time this weekend. We've just been having a bit of a giggle about the fact that they look like Charlie's Angels. But then they announced that that meant that I was Charlie, and I wasn't so sure about that. But there we are. It is my pleasure. My name is Paul Chambers. I work for the Home Department in Guernsey as a restorative justice officer. And I used to stand on Greenbelt's management group years ago. And they've asked me to come and just explain the context of which we're talking about today and this workshop, this talk. As you know, we've been studying Israel-Palestine and fighting the prophetic cause of that over the last few years. And last year, with the start of Billy Bragg coming and talking about his Jail Dog Guitars, and we're moving on now to look at what justice really looks like in the UK. What does it look like in prison? How does that look? And today it's my pleasure to introduce Catherine, Kirsty and Kat, and A Kingdom Welcome, Integrating Ex-Offenders. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for all coming along. It's brilliant to have you all here at the end of a wet weekend. How many of you were here on Saturday for the session on Does Prison Work? Okay, a number of you, but not loads. So my name's Kirsty. I work for the William Wilberforce Trust, which covers a variety of different ministries, one of which is Caring for Ex-Offenders, which is a registered charity looking to support churches in helping those coming out of prison and helping connect people coming out of prison with local churches. Catherine, behind me, heads up the global work of the William Wilberforce Trust, including Caring for Ex-Offenders, and Kat, also behind me, does the local stuff based from a church in London. So that's who we are. On Saturday, we spent some time discussing whether or not prison works. We had, for those of you who were here, we had some really good and fairly lively debates on this topic, including looking at some of the social demographic of those in our prisons, things like the fact that 27% of the people in our prisons currently were taken into care as a child, and that compares to 2% of the general population who've been taken into care as a child. And 67% of those in our prisons were unemployed prior to being imprisoned. And again, that compares to a much, much lower percent, 5% of the general population. So we talked about some of the key areas, some of the key problems that are facing people in our prison system, people being released into our communities. We looked at the issue of employment, of addictions, of housing, and of mental health problems as well. We also discussed the purpose of prison, and looked at whether or not punishment and rehabilitation can coexist, and if they can, how, and if not, why not. So if you missed that, then get it online, listen to it online. We had some really interesting views and a huge range of experience and knowledge that was shared from everybody in the room. Who here is actively working, volunteering, either in statutory organisations or charity sector with people in prison or people coming out of prison? Okay. And how many of you are sort of on that verge of looking into how you might be able to get involved? This is something you're interested in and passionate about and you're looking for next steps. Great, that's really interesting. How many of you in the past have done stuff, work or voluntary work in this area? Great. So based on that, I think we're going to have more opinions and discussions coming today, which is really fantastic. To start off, I just want to sort of look very briefly at the way that media and our society portrays the people in the criminal justice system, and I think rather unhelpfully with the tabloids and media, we've established a very much a them and us attitude, and you'll see it in all the newspapers online. More and more increasingly, you see comments and debates happening at the bottom of newspaper articles online or on social media. And there's a very separate opinion. We feel like we are separate to those in our prison system. And so to look at who it is that is in our prisons is really interesting. And that's some of what we covered on Saturday. But I think it's really important for us to remember that perhaps if we'd had some of the experiences that those in our prisons have had, what decisions would we have made? What choices would we have made that might have ended, caused us to end up in the same situation? And today, as we look at how we respond to those coming out of prison into our communities, if we can just bear in mind, actually, if my best friend, if my brother, my father went into prison, how would I want those around me, my community, my church, to respond to him and support him or her when they came out, or during their sentence and when they came out. It's something that's been talked a lot about in the wake of the riots from last year, and there's been lots of discussions about sentencing, and so it's not a new thing, but I think we're still in that sense of thinking, well, it's fine. I'm really up for people helping those coming out of prison, as long as it's not in my backyard, as long as it doesn't affect my life, my family, my livelihood. So how do we match that with welcoming people and supporting them in our communities? So Catherine is just going to come and talk to you a little bit about caring for ex-offenders.
So as Kirsty said, on Saturday we were talking a little bit about some of the challenges, and it can often paint quite a bleak picture of the social demographics, the vulnerability, the marginalisation of those in our prison system. But today is the exciting bit, because today we're going to talk about how can we actually respond to this. One of the things that we are extremely passionate about is that God has chosen you and I to be the response. That actually, as church, in the wider sense, we can be the people that can actually make a real difference in this area. The reason we believe this, for various different reasons, but if you look in the Bible, there's many, many references as to why we should be doing this. I'm sure you're very, very familiar with Isaiah 61 / Luke 4, proclaiming freedom for the captives. Now, what we get excited about is actually we believe that it refers to those in prison, not just people captive to sin or whatever else is your interpretation, but actually includes those literally in captivity. 1 John 3 talks about our love for each other and how do we actually express that. And it talks about us expressing our love through action, so not just through our words, not just talking about some of this stuff, but actually acting it out. And then 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the body of Christ, and often we talk about our differences and how we can all come together as a body. But a little bit later in that passage, what it actually says is that those who are weakest, those who are most vulnerable, should be given the most honour. And that is what we can do. We can actually spend our time and our resources and our energy and some of our love and relationships with people who perhaps need it the most. The reason why we started Caring for Ex-Offenders is because we knew a lot of people in the prison system who, when they were released, they wanted to go to a community, they wanted to go to a church, and they went and didn't receive the welcome or the care or the support that they perhaps wanted or needed. And so we often had people come to us and say, how is this? How is it that in the prison we get a lot of volunteers coming in and showing love and really demonstrating quite a radical approach, but when it comes to the churches, it's not quite the same? So we tried to find out what it is, what is actually causing that. And often what we found, it was purely just a lack of experience or resourcing or equipping. And so we developed a training system where we would go out and resource and equip churches, so both with initial training, but also longer-term support and advice, so that people didn't feel completely on their own when it comes to looking after and supporting and empowering somebody who's been in the prison system. Our vision is to reintegrate ex-offenders into society through the local church. And the way that we work is we will train and equip churches, as I said, and then we will take referrals from usually the chaplaincy, sometimes the resettlement teams within the prisons around the UK, and then we'll connect in individuals who want this kind of support into a church of their resettlement area. We often really advocate a team approach because we're passionate about mentoring, we're passionate about practical support, but we're also passionate about relationship and community, and that this should be something that lasts long term. And we're also really passionate about a holistic approach. Another thing that we often had reports back in the early days from a lot of individuals was people want to give us Bible studies or want to give us kind of discipleship support, but not necessarily some of the practical stuff. And often the argument would be, well, that's the government's responsibility. But the challenge of that is that, as we've seen, our system doesn't have enough capacity. But also, it's really difficult to separate out somebody's practical needs and somebody's emotional needs. And often they go hand in hand. And it's very difficult for somebody to start addressing some of their emotional or spiritual needs without having first a bit of food in their stomach or a roof over their heads. So that's part of what our training encompasses, is how to provide some kind of practical support as well as the relationship, as well as a community base. We just wanted to tell you a few stories, actually, about different expressions of church in relation to people in the criminal justice system. So starting with church inside the prison.
Thank you. Yeah, as Kirsty mentioned, I head up our work locally based from HTB, and we have the privilege of going in each week and spending time in Pentonville Prison. And I've also done the same in Holloway. And it is a real privilege to go in each week and spend time supporting the chaplaincy there and getting to know the men and women in those prisons. And in terms of thinking about what church looks like in that context, it really is church like any other. We, 3 times a year for 6 weeks, we run Alpha with them. But in the meantime, we just go in and have a home group with them. So all the guys who, through the terms, maybe have been doing Alpha or other chaplaincy activity, we just go in midweek and have a small group with them. We listen, we build relationships, we laugh with each other and cry with each other. We teach, train, pray with, worship with each other. So it is just like church. We seek to affirm each individual and encourage them and raise them up as leaders in their own right. We want these guys and women to be our future church leaders, and just as much while they're in prison as an opportunity to raise them up in leadership. One recent example, I think one of the things, if you've been into prison, to chat to the guys there, is just the kind of level of vulnerability and reality to the conversations that you have that I think is sometimes missing from a lot of the conversations and experience I have, anyway, outside of that context. They're sort of, once you've been convicted of a crime and are in prison, that whole sense of, am I a sinner, becomes less of a discussion compared with some of the conversations I have with friends of mine who aren't Christian. And this one individual, he'd been in and out of prison pretty much his whole life. He'd been referred to Caring for Ex-Offenders and linked to a church on the outside, had reoffended, had come back into prison. And this was the umpteenth time of that cycle. When he was young, he'd suffered a lot of abuse. He'd lost a brother to cancer. And he's done some quite extraordinary things, all pretty much numb to the world. Who he really was had been squashed so far inside of him for so many years. And you really got a sense that he had no idea of who he was or of what he was doing or what that impact was on the wider society. And actually just last week, following this cycle of in and out and in and out, we had our home group meeting. And for the first time, it felt like something clicked. He made contact with himself and reached a point that I don't think he had before, and was on his knees in desperation and in tears. But in that same moment, that was also taking place in the context of being accepted and loved and forgiven, and happening in a really safe place in the chapel in that prison with a group of people around him who were just there to love him and to provide that space where for the first time he could actually kind of look at who he was and who he wanted to be. And our only real job in that was to love him as much as we could, to accept him, to be Jesus to him, and to affirm him, and then help him begin to believe in a new identity and a new life that was possible. And he is just one of a list of those kind of stories that we get the opportunity when we go into prison to see. And just to run through that example. So Pablo, another guy, changed his name to Paul after becoming a Christian in the chapel. Kimran had a near-death experience and knows that God healed him. Andy's written a play and feels that God has changed him in the past couple of weeks. David wrote Christian hip-hop songs, which he wants to get published. Tommy might finally get the all clear in his life. Liam's completely changed from a paranoid schizophrenic to a much more hopeful person. Ed has stopped self-harming and trying to commit suicide. These are just stories from this last term of our involvement in prison. And that is what church looks like inside the prison.
So the next stage that we think church is pivotal is the point at which somebody is released from prison. Now, for those of you who have got any involvement with the system, you'll be really familiar that this can be a frightening time for somebody being released. I think often we imagine it to be really exciting because you've been locked up and time's come for release and hooray, I'm going to have my freedom. But actually, it can be terrifying for a lot of people. You're released with about 45 quid, with a travel pass, and often that's about it. So one of the things that we really try and encourage our volunteers to do is go and actually meet somebody at the prison gate. So be a friendly face who's waiting outside the prison. Part of the reason we do that is, as I said, pivotal moment, but also because often there are a bunch of other people waiting, but perhaps haven't got similar intentions. So one of my recent experiences of going meeting somebody at the prison gate, there was a silver Mercedes also waiting, with blacked out windows, and guys who did try and kind of threateningly move me out the way to where I was stood. And their intentions, I don't know, I don't want to presume too much, but they certainly didn't want me to be there. and then there were also a group of other people who, it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and already had been drinking quite a bit and were very excited for their family member to be released so that they could go out on a bit of a binge together. One of the prisons that we work with, there's a pub right across the road from the prison, and often that's how far somebody will get. They come out of the prison and they will go straight across the road, and their 45 quid goes pretty quickly in the pub. So one of the things that we can offer is a welcoming, supportive, friendly face of somebody who's there to just help out and walk alongside somebody as they've got to go to their probation appointment, as they've got to go to whatever else that they've got to do that day. As an example, we had a gentleman who was released from prison about 6 months ago, and the church volunteers waited for him outside of the prison. They'd already built up a relationship prior to that. They waited for him outside the prison. They then took him to his probation appointment and then took him afterwards to the church so that they could he could see where he would be going if he wanted to go to the Sunday service. And then they also took him for pizza, and just so that his first day out of prison wasn't this isolating, terrifying experience. Instead, it was filled with people who just wanted to love him and care for him. It sounds like such a small thing, that release point, but actually it is massive in somebody's walk. And if that can be different, if that can be somebody who really is for you, waiting for you, rather than somebody who has got different intentions perhaps, then that can really make such a massive difference. So, longer term support.
So the point of all this church inside the prison and meeting people at the gate is that we want to see, we long to see people coming out of prison and becoming fully part of a community where they are loved, where they belong, where they're part of family. And this is, as Catherine was saying, it's about practically supporting somebody, but in relationship with them. We've got one lady who we've worked with for 3 years now. She was released from prison 3 years ago. She had serious addiction problems that had resulted because of her childhood of trauma and abuse that had gone on persistently. And not only did she have addiction problems, she also suffers from severe post-traumatic stress disorder. And so the practical day-to-day things were really difficult for her, as well as making friends and having people to support her in that. And what she has really benefited from, and what she says that she really needed, was this need for friends who weren't addicts, the need for friends who weren't criminals. And we'd met her in prison where she'd done an Alpha course. She actually did it 15 times, I think, during her sentence. And it has been a long journey. She's been out 3 years. We had the privilege of celebrating with her when her probation license finished. But it's been a tough road. Her mentor has stuck through so many difficulties in the friendship, the highs and the lows of any normal friendship, which has been a real challenge. And yet this woman knows that when she needs something, her mentor and the church are there for her and will help sort out when the washing machine breaks down in her flat and she can't quite bring herself to make, she hasn't got the emotional capacity to phone the housing providers and say that it needs sorting. So she gets her mentor to do that. And that's just such a practical demonstration of the caring and supportive friendship that has been built up over a long, long time. And gradually she is becoming more and more part of the community. She meets new friends. She goes for dinners and she even came on a church week away with us, which was just extraordinary. I'm not saying it's been easy. It has required so much determination and persistence on her part, as well as the team who've been supporting her. But it has been so worth it, and we see such a dramatic change as we welcome her with open arms, no matter what happens. What we're going to do now is get you guys to think about how we might go about supporting people when they come out of prison, how we can welcome them into our church communities. So I'm going to split the room into four. So sort of the first five rows, I'll number you. So this sort of quarter here, five rows and forward here, you're number one. Five rows and forward here, you're number two. That back of the room over there, number three, and back of the room over there, number four. What I'd love you to do is turn to the people next to you, preferably in about groups of four. And I'm going to give you some case studies to talk about and see what you would do in each of these situations. There are pens and paper that Kat and Catherine will hand out if you need to jot down the situation that you are going to discuss what to do. So those in this front section, number ones, this is your case study. Bob has been out of prison and attending your church for 2 months. One of your congregation members has just told you that their car is missing. And Bob was seen leaving the church service early. You know that his offence was for car theft. What do you do? Got that? Group two. John was released 3 months ago from the prison where he was on the vulnerable prisoners unit. He's been attending your church and wants to come along to a family picnic. What do you do? Okay, group three, so that's the back corner over there. Ed has been attending your church since he was released from prison 6 months ago. He was in for theft to support a drug addiction, but has been clean since being released. However, a member of the church has just told you that he suspects Ed is using again. What do you do? And last group, group four over here, you are looking at Paul, who poses a medium risk of harm to the public. However, he's a sociable man, and members of your church have been giving him their phone numbers and inviting him round for dinner. What do you do? Do you want me to repeat those, or are you okay to go? Okay, go. You've got 5 minutes to discuss these in your groups. People are clearly engaging with this, which is always a good sign. Now, one of the reasons I love doing stories like this and looking at what we'd do is just because it's a fantastic chance for us to learn from each other and to share as a wider community how we might respond. Can I have somebody who was looking at the first story? So that was Bob, who'd been attending church for 2 months and a car's gone missing. And you know that Bob was served a sentence for car theft. You saw him leave the church service early. What do you do? Could I have somebody who looked at that case study come up to the mic and just give a few of their thoughts of what they would do in response to that? Brilliant. Thank you.
Well, we felt the first thing to do was for the person who had the best relationship with him to try and contact him. And it had to be the person who had the best relationship, because somehow or other they've got to broach the question without it being a breach of trust between them of, have you taken this car? If the guy denies it, then obviously it's got to be reported. If he says, yes, I have got it, then try and persuade him to turn around and bring it back again and try and work out why, what triggered this.
Fantastic.
What made him do it. I mean, it might be that he just had a message that his mother was dying, for example.
Brilliant. Anybody else who had that same case study?
He might not have known anything about the stolen car, so we would go... our close relationship person to him would go up to him or phone him or something and say, hey Bob, are you all right? You left church early. He might have been sick.
Great. Any other responses? Yes.
I think the person who's lost the car should report it to the police. I think we shouldn't always assume that because people have stolen something before that it's them. How do we expect people to be rehabilitated if they're always going to be under an air of suspicion? The people who are close to them, I mean, some of the things they might do, and it depends on the relationship, is also help them to appreciate how how they can deal with that, because if the community is such that they are pointing the finger, then that makes that a very uncomfortable place to be.
Great. Any contrasting thoughts to those in those who looked at that story? One more.
It's not a contrasting thought, it's just an interesting one in the background. To what extent do all the people in that church, or many people in that church, know about his background?
Brilliant. Great. That's a really interesting point that you just raised, and I think one that we need to be really careful on, though, that confidentiality and trusting relationship is really important for welcoming somebody into a family. What caring for ex-offenders, what we would recommend is that a small team of volunteers who are going to be working closely with the individual would know some of the background, but that it wouldn't be shared with the entire church, it wouldn't be publicised anywhere. But that would be up to Bob to disclose as and when he felt comfortable in sharing that. But yeah, that's a really good thing to bear in mind. And really interesting responses of whether to report to the police or not, whether to go to the police before speaking to Bob or approaching Bob first. But I think I really loved how you focused on that person who has the best relationship with him. I think that's such a sign of the community that we long to bring people into. Right, who looked at the second one, which was John, who was released from prison where he was on a vulnerable prisoners unit, and he's been attending your church and wants to come to a family picnic. What do you do? Who wants to start us off? Go on, someone be brave. I know you were all discussing lots, so brilliant. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, there was just a little four of us group were discussing it. Our mentor that our church has been on a very special caring for ex-offenders training course. So this person was trusted by the rest of the church to take care of this guy. So they didn't have to know who he was or what he'd done. They just knew that he was under the protection of this person. And so whether it was appropriate or not for him to come on the picnic wasn't something that everybody needed to know about or discuss. It was just this one guy who had an oversight and an awareness and some training of how to do that. So it took the onus off the people trying to make a decision and just was on this one person who was sort of liaison within the church who knew exactly what to do. There were quite a few other issues that we discussed, but we thought that was probably about a fair summation.
Great. There's another one there.
I think we discussed it quite a lot and then decided that having sort of rigorous child protection procedures in place in the first place, so that when anything comes along, you're already doing things the right way, is the best way of protecting people, including that individual.
Brilliant. Can I just ask, was the assumption there that he was a sex offender or no?
No, we did say that just because he'd been on the vulnerable unit, you know, that could be, he might have just been bullied in the prison or something like that. So you can't just assume it was there for that reason.
Brilliant. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Vulnerable Prisoners Unit, it's where a lot of the sex offenders are put in the prison because they are bullied and persecuted by other prisoners. But it does also hold police officers, things like that. So it can be a wide group. So that's a really key point to pick up on. Any other comments on that one?
Yeah, it did raise a lot of conversation. We didn't actually define exactly how it should work, but my suggestion was whoever's the person in the leadership of the church who's the child protection officer, you know, he's the person who really should be monitoring and getting to know this person who's coming along. and they should know not just what the criminal convictions are, but also in terms of their whole background and their motivations to see if they've moved on or not. Because I feel that as a church, you can't exclude people who are offenders, but you need to know that they've actually been rehabilitated from that. And I think whoever the person who's a designated officer in the church, well, they should make sure that they keep a close watch on them, because I'm unfortunate, I'm in a position where I know too many cases of churches where people, non-offenders, have been in the church and the leadership have allowed them to have contact with everybody else's children in the church, but not the leadership's, and then a lot of abuse has happened, you know. So, and I think there are ways of facilitating that, but it needs to be done carefully.
Yeah, so having the correct policies in place that apply across the board, so that they're consistent policies to protect everybody, including the individual who's coming in. Did anybody touch on any sort of what that individual may or may not be allowed to do by law? Did anybody talk about that? There's one little hand poked up there.
Often people's terms of probation will be laid down in contract and things like that, so they will have to inform their probation officers if they are going to have contact with anyone who may have been or may not have been related to their crime, etc. So you might not have a decision at all, they might not be allowed to do it, full stop.
Fantastic. So consulting the statutory organisations is always really helpful. Somebody who is on the sex register may have licence conditions that prevent them attending an occasion like that, and that would take the onus off you making a decision anyway. Great. Let's look at the third case study. Was it Ed I gave you at the back? With so Ed's been attending church for 6 months. He's in theft. He was in prison for theft to support a drug addiction, and somebody suspects that Ed is using again. So what do you do? Who wants to start us off?
A bit similar to the first one, that it would be helpful if whoever had the closest relationship with Ed were to talk to him and try to find out if anything was wrong as a preliminary. But it was also pointed out that if the church had good procedures in place, then there might be there should be regular contact with Ed to review what was happening to him, so it didn't just come out of the blue like an accusation.
Yeah, great.
We were also saying that we needed to, if someone comes and says we've got a suspicion he's using again, actually find out what caused that suspicion, because it might just be he's hanging around with old friends and there might be absolutely nothing in it, and you don't want to kind of cause a storm. And we said it was really important to make sure it didn't become church gossip, going around finding out, speaking to other people, oh, have you seen him doing something suspicious and things like that. So we were saying you had to be careful, but again we said, yeah, get someone who's closest to him. If we do think there's something, just to ask the general question of how are you, rather than are you using again, and give him the chance to talk if you want someone to talk to.
Yeah, great. What about the congregation member who suspects? Did anybody have any thoughts on how to approach that side of the situation?
Well, our group, we... we are. The first thing we said was find out what the basis of the suspicion is, because something one of our group pointed out was that if people are trying to, say, get back into conventional sleep cycles, they might, say, pull an all-nighter and then look absolutely shattered the next morning, which could cause some overly enthusiastic congregation member to make connections that weren't necessarily there. So you need to find out what the suspicion is. And I think something that was said was throughout all of this and prior to this situation cropping up, what needs to happen is a positive relationship as much as possible. You need to avoid alienation and suspicion as much as possible. And discretion is definitely the better part of valor on this one.
Brilliant. Thank you. Great. Let's look at the final one then, which is Paul poses a medium risk of harm to the public. However, he's a sociable man and members of the church have been giving him their phone numbers and inviting him round for dinner. What do you do? Somebody from the back, my right, who wants to kick us off? Great.
Sorry, can you come to the microphone, please?
It's on a lead, so you might have to meet halfway.
Well, we thought it was good that they were getting support from the other congregation, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't put a mocker on that. But if they had any concerns, to have a word with the mentor. Obviously, we'd need to know a bit more about what they meant by medium risk, and hopefully get that information from the probation officer.
Great.
As much as possible. Obviously not to announce it in the church or anything, but obviously if they did have concerns to come speak to them or even invite the mentor along with them.
Fantastic.
So that they have a better way of understanding.
Brilliant. Any other thoughts on that one? No burning desire to comment further? One more.
We weren't sure what medium risk would actually be, mm-hmm. but we did say if it was a risk of children and families, then he would know better than anyone what his contract was or what his restrictions were, and that somebody in the church would probably need to know that. Someone should have that information. So we did discuss around that.
Brilliant. So that mixture of having the necessary knowledge and awareness of some of the background and potential risks, but also being able to be in a loving and welcoming relationship where he can be accepted and go to dinners perhaps with his mentor or in a safe situation. That is fantastic. Thank you so much for all inputting. It's really great to get grappling with some of these situations.
Thank you. All of those were real situations that either our church or other churches that we're supporting and providing training and resources to have had with the guys that they're working with. What we're going to move on to, we're going to have some Q&A at the end, but before that, hopefully you are now all sitting here saying, that is brilliant. How do we as a church community now get involved and put some of this into practice? So the first step of that, so we have a network, Caring for Ex-Offenders, of churches around the UK who've said, yeah, we want to be part of this. We want to welcome ex-offenders into the church community. And so we would love for that network to be bigger. There are often times where we know have someone being linked from the prison, we're in touch with them, and they're resettling to an area where we don't have a church that's saying that. And so we would love for that network to be a lot bigger. And so if you are part of a church community here, either in leadership or just one of the congregation, and think that's something that your church would be interested in getting involved in, and then having the training and resourcing that we can provide, we've got church registration forms. So please do come and grab one off us at the end, and we would love to hear from you and start that journey. Alongside that, we'd love, I think one of the great things about Greenbelt is just this opportunity to start the conversation, to start debating some of the issues that these things raise up, and for all of us then to go out and continue to be advocates on this stuff, to challenge people on the fact that, you know, our prison population has doubled in the last 18 years. Does that really make you think that this is working? Are we really making our country safer, challenging people's views, being an advocate around issues to do with mental health, the reality of addiction and drugs in our prison system, women in prison, all of those things we can be advocates for. We can do more research and we can be a voice for the voiceless. And also being aware of our communication. We mentioned at the start the whole us and them attitude that we can sometimes have ourselves or hear about, whereas actually it needs to be me and you. And I was chatting to someone just at the beginning of the group time about, you know, a lot of this is but for the grace of God go we, and being clear yeah, just taking any opportunity we can to have this conversation with people and to be a voice. A couple of other things you might... We have a conference coming up. Hopefully you've all got flyers on your chairs about the conference in October, so please do come to that, hear a lot more stories, get more resources and training. And then we also send out a quarterly newsletter, which if you're interested in signing up for, you can sign up for at the desk here as well. We want, if you'll see the little William Wilberforce Trust logo, conveniently has the letters "I am for you" in it. And we really want to be a voice that says to everyone, "I am for you." So now we'll move into a time of Q&A. So, yeah, if anyone has a question, please do raise your hand and we'll come around again with the mic.
Thanks. You mentioned the doubling of prison population in the last 17 years. Do you or any other such organisation try to do anything about that, either to government or indeed to churches, may I ask? Please?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of things that we can do about that practically, one of which is exactly what we've just been talking about. If we love and support people that are coming out of the prison system, then our hope is that they won't be going back, because the same people are often the ones that are churning through the system and going back repeatedly. There are also organisations who are campaigning for change on certain issues in the prison system. So, for example, there's an organisation called Make Justice Work who are trying to campaign for the scrapping of short sentencing and the use of alternative community sentencing instead. Short sentencing, for those that aren't aware, is sentencing under 12 months. And often this can be kind of a matter of weeks and months and just causes absolute chaos in people's lives, because they just end up going in and out and in and out for very short periods of time, losing any accommodation that they may have, that kind of thing. So Make Justice Work. There's also organisations like the Prison Reform Trust who campaign for prison reform, and again, the Howard League as well, who kind of take the stance that actually prison should often be reserved for just the most serious offenders, and the majority of the people in our prison system aren't actually the most serious offenders. They can be people who nicked a bottle of Tizer during the riots or things like that. So there are a number of organisations who are trying to reduce that through various ways, but I think it varies depending on your approach as to whether it's sentencing or whether it's providing the support for people so that they don't have to come out. But I think if we take this kind of multi-pronged approach, then we do have a real chance of changing this and not having 86,000 people in our prison system at the moment.
It sounds like a really exciting program. I sort of can really visualise it for sort of big churches with lots of organisational structure. How would this work for very small churches in the region of like 20 people who have much less organisational structure?
Any question that starts, "This is so exciting," is always awesome. So thanks for that. It is completely possible. So I think partly we would say, if as a church you are small and feel under-resourced in some respects, then joining up with other churches is a great thing to do. So there's loads of kind of networks of churches that join up and do a bunch of stuff together, rather than trying to kind of sit in our own little bubbles and not partnering. But also, actually, part of this is relationship, and a huge part of it is relationship. And so your 20 people can offer relationship, can offer a welcoming environment, can offer, you know, a handful of one or two people who are saying, "I'm up for just going out for a coffee and hanging out with somebody who needs to have different friendships." We heard the story of the lady who... That was one of the key things. She just wanted a completely different group of people, because the only people she knew were heroin addicts. And so to have 20 people who are saying, "Actually, you're welcome here, and a couple of us are going to take some of our time every single week, and sometimes even every single day for a bit, just to have contact with you and to care about what's going on with you." So I would really encourage you that, you know, if you're excited about this, then it is perfectly possible, and anything that we can do in order to support you and equip you and resource you to do that, then we'd love to be able to do that.
Can I just add to that as well that there is a lot of local provision out there, and one of the things that it's great as a smaller church particularly to do is to know what's in your local area that people can access. So even if you've just one person, you can know what food banks there are, what night shelters there are, where the benefit office is. You can have all that information ready for somebody when they need to know that stuff.
I just wanted to give a supplementary comment to the what do we do about the doubling high imprisoned figures. I work with women in prison and have an academic interest in it too. And you can do things like become a magistrate as well as all those brilliant suggestions you get. They're really pragmatic. And like the magistracy at the moment is very one kind of demographic and they're actively looking to expand. So there are real on-the-ground things you can do like that. And also, I suspect you guys can't say this, but that this is a political issue as well. And I'm not going to get into the party politics of it, but things like the violent crime rate last year in the British Crime Survey had dropped. But people, there's still more people going into prison. Women are given harsher sentences than men. So it is a political issue. It isn't necessarily that crime's increased and therefore more people are in prison. So I would also really encourage people to talk to your MPs, to be involved in campaigning organisations or specific issues, because it is also about who is running the country, the wider social picture and their criminal justice policies. Thanks.
I have to say, I haven't heard about you guys before, so it's really interesting to hear about what you're saying. And at my church, we've just started to put a group together to get alongside a couple of people who've been coming along who have been in and out of prison a bit, haven't been in recently, but they've been getting stuck into our church. And we're trying to kind of put together a bit of a database of information in the area about things like housing and how to get maybe back into jobs when you've got the criminal record. Have you got any suggestions as to where we can obtain that information?
Yeah, I mean, partly it's on your doorstep. There will be organisations, as Kirsty talked about, that are providing a range of services. And also on our website, we try and include a list of links, various different organisations, which not only list things, so things like NACRO has a resettlement finder database, but also, you know, other organisations that are involved in this area, and just useful information that we try and provide. So that's on caringforexoffenders.org, and there's a links page. And then also the other thing that we have is for churches who are involved in this, we've put together a little handbook, and it's not meant to be the most expert advice on things, but it's just hints and tips and bits of advice and lists of organisations that are useful in various different areas, whether it's housing or addiction or anything that, you know, will be useful. So that handbook is available from us as well. And just to say as well, before the next question, I really appreciated the lady's comment on other ways of getting involved. That's really handy. If anybody else has got suggestions like that, then please do say.
Hi. Yeah. I think this is massively exciting as well. Really, really exciting.
Yay.
my thing is gospel music, gospel choirs. My dream is to get the churches together in Norwich, where I'm from, into prisons and perhaps start a gospel choir in prison so that when people come out, they can join us and all that stuff. But I have never been in a prison before. I am not... I'm from a very kind of well-balanced Christian family. I've never had any kind of experience with people with addictions. And frankly, I feel like a kind of naive, you know, little white girl that's going to waltz in and go, "Hi, why don't we sing?" Do you know what I mean? And I so I guess what I'm asking is, do you have any advice in terms of... I've been to a few sessions like this, and people have also mentioned that actually people in prison are broken people, they are hurting people. Do you have any advice for how to deal with and help and respond to people that actually might not be ready to be loved and actually might have difficulties that I just don't know how to face and how to deal with?
Yeah, I mean...
Is that clear?
I think so. I'll try and then you can tell me whether I've not answered it. I think it's you and I. You know, it's you and I that's in prison. It's your church congregation. It's your friends. It's all the people that we come into contact on a day-to-day basis who have various issues that none of us are all neat and tidy. And It's just that that brokenness might look a bit different. I think the fact that you are approaching it with such humility and wanting to give is a massive step in itself. So, you know, probably don't go into the prison and say, do you want to sing? But but I think that, you know, the fact that you wanting to give your time. We do offer training, so we do try and train people in doing some of this work, which I think that's a big step to take, to try and get yourself equipped to be able to do some of this stuff. And just getting more knowledgeable. So it's partly through who you'll meet and who you're surrounding yourself with in your own community. But also just finding out what you can about issues. So, you know, if you're saying about addiction, for example, what is it that you already know? What is it that you could find out? Having a bit of a look around the internet on addiction issues is a really simple start. But certainly where you can find your relationships and what is it that your church is already doing, where you can come into contact with a range of different people that aren't all the same as you from the same background as you. Kirsty's got something to add, I think.
I'd love to talk to you about music in prisons. I've had a bit of experience of that. Come and talk to me afterwards.
Under 5 minutes left.
Okay, thanks.
Just, I've got 2 points and they're not necessarily connected, but the first one is we mustn't forget that the victims of crime are disproportionately the poorest, the most vulnerable, those who are... And so it's all very well to sit comfortably as nice, mainly majority, barely middle-class people and say less people should go to prison. But if you're living on a tough estate and one person leaving that estate makes a huge difference, you're grateful for the 3 months or 6 months, whatever it is they're sentenced to. So that's sort of a counterpoint, and I know it won't make me popular in this room, but it's worth saying that the victims of crime are also the poorest. I work with young men who are between the ages of 12 and 17 who've been sentenced or remanded by the courts. They've to be sentenced or remanded at that age, you tend to have done something on the more serious edge of the criminal justice scale rather than the we don't get many who've stolen a car. They've done things more serious than that. I was working with them once, and they said to me, Andrew, it's all very well coming to church here. We like chapel, we like what goes on. The problem is when we go out, that everybody in that church is going to look down on us. So I spent quite a lot of time talking about the attitude that every Christian should have is that I am the chief of sinners. I'm the very worst sinner there could be. My own background is I grew up on a fairly tough estate, but my parents were Christians, so I didn't get involved in crime. I didn't get involved in those things. But I should have known better for the things that I did. I bullied my little brother. I stole a few pennies from my mom. I should have known better because I had a different background to them. Some of our guys have had really difficult backgrounds. And I think the point you were saying before is, I think often when I meet them, it's a miracle they're as well adjusted as they are.
Thanks. Just to add to your point about victims of crime, we completely agree with you. And certainly, I think any approach that comes from a point of wanting to work in rehabilitation is not intended to overlook the victims of crime. We're all speaking as victims of crime, actually. So it's certainly an experience that I'm sure many of you have had as well. But in our experience, actually, a restorative approach tends to be more effective, not only for the offender, but also to the victim, more so than an approach of punishment alone.
First of all, thank you very much for a very engaging and exciting presentation. It sounds like you're doing fantastic work. Someone asked before about if they're in a very small church, and the suggestion was that they team up with other churches in the area. I wondered, do you ever engage in interfaith projects, so where maybe a church and a mosque both want to do this and work together?
We've got some situations in, as probably a lot of you know, most chaplaincies in the prisons now are multi-faith. They were all supposed to be multi-faith, but it's just dependent on the financing in each prison as to whether they can afford to employ a chaplain for each of the faiths. So we tend to have some crossovers there where we'll work together when it comes to people who are wanting to be supported on the outside. And so it might be that, you know, somebody comes along and says, I'd really appreciate some support, and then they're presented with a range of different options. So that's mainly where we go into partnership is from within the prison, from that starting point. I think we'd be really interested to hear what other projects exist from other faith perspectives. We know of a couple, particularly from Islamic faith, but not a huge amount from a lot of other faiths. So it'd be really, if you knew of any, it'd be really interesting to know about them that are kind of doing a similar thing to us.
Hi. Just a quick one. Well, hopefully quick one. Thanks so much. It's just so amazing what you're doing and really inspiring. It's just that I'm wondering how, I didn't hear the beginning of your talk, but I'm wondering how this idea of when I was in prison, you visited me. How we, you know, as Christians on the outside, waiting to welcome people into our churches, it seems to me not enough, you know, to actually get into the prisons and see people when they're at their lowest ebb. How do you get into the prisons as, you know, how possible is that? I kind of echo the other girl who was saying about taking music in. Obviously, you've got something, but, you know, how can we actually perhaps even go in as Christians into those places? Thanks.
Yeah, there are actually quite a few different options that you can go down. So it might be that you take a group of volunteers in to help run an Alpha course in the chapel. It might be that you take part in something called a Sycamore Tree course, which is run by an organisation called Prison Fellowship. And that's based around restorative justice and people understanding the effect of their crime, both on themselves and their families, as well as the wider community. Again, they're always looking for volunteers. Phoning up the chaplain and just saying, do you know what? I'd love to come and help you out. Do you want me to come and put out the teas and biscuits after a Sunday service? I'm sure there'd be a lot of people who'd be very, very glad of having that help. And again, we can offer some training as to kind of going into prison, do's and don'ts, a little bit of kind of basics around that, as I mentioned. But there are quite a number of different projects. And then I think Kirsty probably knows more about the kind of arts in prison and some of the music and theatre that happens as well, that if you were interested in that angle. So there's usually quite a lot to join in, and it's more kind of getting your security clearance and making sure that you can actually get in on a regular basis. But the National Offender Management Service have assured us that they are trying to kind of make it easier for volunteers to come in, so we hope for that. So that was prison visiting, the gentleman was just mentioning. And also just to add to that, that Prison Fellowship as a charity also do some letter writing training as well. So if anybody wanted to have correspondence with somebody in prison and just provide, you know, a bit of letter correspondence to people who maybe are serving longer prison sentences, then that would be very much appreciated, I think, from them. Great. Thanks so much, everybody, for coming. If anybody didn't get to ask their question, then please come and talk to us. We'll be hanging around.